Shakespeare on the Rocks presents Much Ado About Nothing this weekend in the second of three weekend shows of its annual festival, which will run through November 12th at the Chamizal National Memorial. Show times are 7 p.m. Saturday and 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. Today, my guests are Loreli Rodriguez, Austin Savage, and David Mills. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you.
So, David, Shakespeare on the Rocks, is a El Paso tradition. How long have you been at it?
It's our 29th season.
That's it.
Yeah, we took a little 10-year break in there at the beginning. But, yeah, we've been doing this since 1981.
I remember when I was a student at EPCC and Mr. Serrano was my teacher. And extra credit was go to Shakespeare on the Rocks.
Yep.
And it was always magical.
We love extra credit.
Yes, I saw The Tempest for I don't know how much extra credit, but it was great.
Yeah, we love teachers who give extra credit for Shakespeare.
And now we have two young actors pretty seasoned in Shakespeare, or is this your first time doing Shakespeare?
This will be my fifth time doing Shakespeare on the Rocks.
Oh, Loreli, so what else have you done in Shakespeare?
I did The Taming of the Shrew, and I was a widow. It was pretty interesting, fun character. And then I played a servant in Romeo and Juliet, and then I actually got to be Juliet last year.
What was that like? Because Juliet is like major.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, you know. Hector had a cool twist for it. He actually let my boyfriend be Romeo.
No way!
Yeah, so we've been in the season the same amount of time, so it was really fun. The connection was there, and it was a bilingual. So I got to speak Spanish with my parents and English with Romeo. It was really fun.
That's right. Romeo y Julieta. I believe we talked about this. Or if not, we at least featured it. I know it's in here somewhere. And now Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, I am playing Beatrice, which is super interesting. She's a totally different character from Juliet. You know, Juliet is really like sweet and, you know, passive and in love, and Beatrice is just so witty and so wild and like she doesn't care, you know. She just hurts with words, I guess, you know?
Well, as you know, as some ladies will.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no harm in that.
No, not at all. Sometimes your words are stronger than actions, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And Austin, what about you and your relationship with Shakespeare?
I've done productions in the past, never with Shakespeare in the Rocks. I did Banquo and Macbeth a long time ago, and I was actually Prospero in Tempest.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I saw you. I don't know.
Shaved head and Celtic tattoos all over my head. It was a while back. But they asked if I had any interest in doing Richard III. And interestingly enough, I have actually worked the character before, but in a different play.
Really?
Since it's Richard III is the fourth piece in a historical epic. So there's four plays about the War of the Roses, and this is the fourth and final piece. So I had actually done the character, but only in Henry VI, Part 3. So.
And are you carrying him out the same way you carried him out in that
version? It's a different production, you know. But the gist of the man is still there. He's still vile. He still believes he is supernaturally determined to be evil, that God has made him this way, and it's his destiny and his duty to fulfill.
I guess it makes things easier when you believe that, right? You have to truly believe something like that in order to carry it out.
Right.
But do tell us about Richard III, because I feel like it hasn't been performed as much in Shakespeare on the Rocks. Is that true?
Well, our classic model, if you will, is we'll do a play for 3 years in a row, and then we rotate it out of the repertory. But recently, due to various things out of our control, we've not followed that. But we did do Richard in 2011, and then we did it again in 2014.
Okay, so it hasn't been that long.
The third time, but it's been a few years.
Okay, I guess, you know, there's some of them that just have that name recognition, like Much Ado, and of course, you know, your Romeo and Juliet, right, and your Tempest. What is it like for you all to perform Shakespeare? I mean, this is classic stuff, and it's got staying power for a reason, but do you know why, or do you feel that reason as a performer?
I mean, I would say yes, personally. Like, I like to read into what he wrote, you know, and really get the meaning of it, the context of it. I really enjoy his style of writing, and I feel like it's really deep. So sometimes having to really have that connection with your character, really having to search, like, what is it that I have to do? Why am I doing this? Like, doesn't make sense at first, and then you get it and you get together with the rest of the cast and you're like, oh, wow, this makes total sense now. Like, yay, so I wasn't wrong. You know, I totally understood, but now I get it even more. So I think it's just more going into depth. It really takes a lot of research. When, in my perspective, you know, I feel that you really have to really go into a way of understanding it and really looking into it.
Sure, because as somebody, you know, sophomore English, you have to read Shakespeare, and you read it, and you may or may not understand it, but something about seeing it on the stage just kind of makes it all completely clear. And I imagine that actually acting it on stage gives you that true understanding of what he was trying to do.
Yeah, in all honesty, I was not a huge Shakespeare acolyte or anything, you know, when I first started.
Right.
And I did Macbeth, and, you know, doing stuff makes you always appreciate it a little bit more. And even for me personally, you know, reading and referencing him a lot and all that kind of stuff, I personally gravitate towards specific pieces.
Which ones are they?
Actually, like Richard the
Richard the Third, it goes to your heart.
Right. Yeah, me personally, I actually like the histories a lot. I just do. I think the comedies, I mean, sound horrible, but there are a lot of repetition in them, and he kind of had a formula for those. And some of the dramas were, you know, essentially contrafacted from Italian works and all that stuff. But the histories are kind of unique unto him, and his presentation of them is always uber, uber fascinating to me, you know. Especially him trying to appease his English audience with the recounting of their own past while still keeping it narratively interesting. Like Joan of Arc, for example, appears in one of the history plays.
Yeah.
But she cavorts with demons and is presented as a villain.
So
you know?
It's
fascinating to me. And then it makes sense. They're English people. They're not a big fan of a 13-year-old girl who kicked the crap out of them.
I could see that. Do you know how they were received at the time, especially his historical plays?
The historical plays, particularly Richard, he wrote for kind of an audience of one, which was the queen. Her ancestor is or was Richmond, who defeated Richard at the end of the play. So he purposely made Richard look bad to make her ancestor look good. So, but I think they were, interestingly, if you look back over the 5 centuries that Shakespeare's been performed, he's gone in and out of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, fortunately for us, he's back in fashion. But in the 17th century, or rather in the 18th century, not so much.
Well, you know, it's hard to be around for that long and to just, you know, it's hard to be consistently loved, I think.
Indeed.
And, you know, maybe it's good for him, even if he's not with us. I guess that's where all the different interpretations of his works come from, no? Something like Romeo and Julieta and all the kind of fun iterations that you all can do.
Well, if I can just put in one plug for the language, I find what's interesting about Shakespeare is he's very cinematographic. And I'm not sure I pronounced that right. But because in his language, you see what it is he's seeing. You see the setting. You smell the flowers. You hear the wind. You get to know what people are wearing, what it looks like. And it's amazing how he creates this total reality just with words in a way that you don't get from very many other playwrights.
Did you get that memo right away? I mean, you've been doing this for 29 years, and I mean, you've been in the theater forever. Did that land with you the first time? I mean, can you put yourself back there? Okay, good. So I'm not the only one.
It takes time. It takes a little time, yeah.
So how long did it take somebody like you, David, for it to actually land?
Well, I remember in 7th grade, we had a very ambitious teacher, and she had us read A Midsummer Night's Dream and another comedy, All's Well That Ends Well. And I remember struggling terribly with that.
Yes.
And not liking Shakespeare because it was so difficult. And then over the years, as I've tried to be an actor and now I'm a producer, my perspective has changed. And so that's kind of something that I've come to believe, that he's this, he paints an entire world with words.
And it comes with practice, I would think. I mean, kind of like your experience that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think even this semester, I had a class for British Anglo-Saxon literature.
Right, and I'm like, what do I do with this?
No, yeah, it was really fun, you know, reading it. And we got to read King Lear. And I was just so astounded by how much more I got to discover. I was like, wow, okay, I thought I knew Shakespeare. But nope, here I am again, learning some more.
You and the rest of the world, yeah. You know. And it's so refreshing to hear that it doesn't land the first time. Because I remember feeling that way, too.
If anything, my professor, something that she said that stuck with me is that sometimes it intimidates people, you know, and they feel like, well, I don't know if I'll understand it, so I'm just not going to do it. But, you know, if you give it a try, it's like David said, he does paint such a visual picture that somebody can really imagine and really go into depth with.
Well, and also his language is so important to the English language that's come after him. I mean, so many poets and playwrights and essayists and politicians use his quotes, use his language. And so it's kind of a key to unlocking a lot of what modern English is about.
Austin, aside from being an actor, you are also a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you said maybe not the biggest of influence on you, but is there an influence?
Oh, absolutely. Whether it's directly or not, probably the first major play that I ever adored is a David Rabe piece called Hurly Burly. And of course, that's a direct quote from Macbeth. You know what I mean? So as David mentioned, whether it's directly or indirectly, he's always there. One other thing I always think about him in terms of writing or as a performer, too, is we're so used to kind of contemporary ideology and performance where there's subtext and all this inner psychological workings on. It's kind of neat. His characters say exactly what they say and they do exactly what they plan to do.
There's not a bad thing at all,
not
right?
At all.
Well, we've got two more plays coming up in this year's series of Shakespeare on the Rocks. This weekend, you can enjoy Much Ado About Nothing, and the showtimes are 7 p.m. tonight and 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. And then you can catch the final weekend of Richard III, and showtimes are the same, 7 p.m. on Saturday, 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, you can always visit ShakespeareOnTheRocks.com. Today, my guests have been Lorelei Rodriguez, Austin Savage, and David Mills. Thank you for coming to State of the Arts.
Cool.
Thank you for having us.
Always a pleasure.